Back at it with you on a midweek Wednesday, December 2nd on Connecticut Today. In the 3 o'clock hour, we welcomed back from the Cato Institute, Scott Linsicum, who talked about whether or not all these licenses are cumbersome for people if they just want to be entrepreneurs and get a new job in the wake of COVID-19. And in the 4 o'clock hour, Republican State Senate member Paul Formica joined us. Paul is also a restaurant owner, and he gave his comments regarding a possible shutdown again of indoor dining in Connecticut. From the Cato Institute, he's a senior fellow in economic studies there. Scott Linsicum joins us. Scott, Paul here in Bridgeport, Connecticut. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul, doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on. I read with interest your latest piece in which you talk about, as bad as things are now, Scott, and obviously we have to get the vaccines out there. We have to really get over this really second nasty wave. But you've written a piece here that talks about some of the things that are going to be created as far as opportunity here as we look back on this, and really an area where governments like a state government here in Connecticut or a federal government can kind of look at things in a fresh way, especially when it comes to the area of licensing, which I thought was really interesting. Talk a little about that.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, of course, COVID has been disastrous for the U.S. labor market with unemployment spiking. And even now, after a few months of recovery, we're still way above where we were last year, really over the last five years. But if you dig into the data a little bit, you see a silver lining. And that is we've seen a really dramatic and surprising increase in business startups and in sole proprietorships. And the Wall Street Journal just had a great piece on this. The Kansas City Fed wrote a paper on it a couple weeks ago. And they've looked into, well, why is this happening? And it turns out that, according to the Journal, people who ended up getting laid off, they didn't just sit at home and and wait for government help. They actually got out there and they started their own businesses. And they really adapted to kind of what we call the new normal in the COVID economy. And this is, looking at things that might help or benefit remote work, for example, or say like remote auto detailing and the rest. Other things that have happened is that, we've had some business closures, of course, and of course that's unfortunate, but that's provided opportunities, whether it's lower commercial rent space or whatever, and that's caused businesses to get started or people to get out there and finally decide to take a risk on starting a business. And so all of these factors have actually, like I said, led to a surge in business startups. And the reason this is surprising is that for about the last 30 years, the United States has really been struggling in what we nerds call business dynamism. And that's really, put simply, the kind of creation and destruction of companies. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know why it's happening. Some of it's because we're, getting older. And, when you get old like me, you don't want to start your own business or whatever. But a lot of it we really can figure out. And it's really important because startups drive productivity, they drive innovation, and small businesses drive a lot of our job growth.
Yeah.
So economists have been really worried about this, and they've been happy to see this surprising spike in business formation. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is that, unfortunately, there are a lot of state and federal government policies that inhibit business formation. So the World Bank does this annual study every year called the Doing Business Study. There it's not the end all be all, but they rank the United States 55th in the world in terms of ease of starting a business. And that's not just behind random developing countries or whatever. That puts us behind New Zealand and Canada and the United Kingdom, all of our kind of Anglophile brethren out there. Mm-hmm. And even puts us behind places that you would think, of course, they're overregulated in Europe. And so some of that is fees and paperwork and the rest, but a big part of that, and what I really focused on, is occupational licensing. And occupational licensing is the idea that states primarily require individuals to get a license to perform certain professions. Mm-hmm. Of course, things like doctors and lawyers, that's pretty common. But over the last few decades, we've seen a huge increase in the number of occupations that require a license, going from like 5% to almost 30% of occupations. And that of course, is going to have a significant impact on this dynamism we just talked about and startups.
Scott, hang on now. This is fascinating. I want to get back to you on this and the whole issue of licensing. Scott Lincecum's with us from the Cato Institute, a free market institute, a free market think tank. Scott, hang on. Traffic and weather together, and then we'll be back with Scott at 3:36 on WICC. Now, luckily, I don't need a state or federal license to be a talk show host. There was a time in this business when, you know, even little twerps on the radio like me, we used to have to know basic things about transmitter operation, but even that's been put aside. But is licensing really helping consumers and businesses, or is it a cash grab? Scott Lincecum, a few more minutes with Scott from the Cato Institute there. He's a senior fellow in economic studies. So, Scott, let's pick up where you left off. All these licenses. Now, you said, obviously, dentist, doctor, people like that that are dealing with life, and obviously these people have to be licensed. But the fact that a barber has a license, or an esthetician, or a manicurist, or a mechanic, I mean, are these consumer-oriented safety issues, or are some of these just a cash grab?
Yeah, well, the economic literature points very much to the latter, to the cash grab. And like you said, you know, there are quite legitimate public policy grounds for, at least in theory, licensing certain professions. And like I mentioned, back in the good old days, when only about 5% of occupations were licensed, all 50 states generally licensed the same handful of occupations. However, that was back then. Now, there are over 1,100 different occupations in the United States that are licensed by at least one state, and the states vary dramatically.
I can't think of I can't think of 1,100 jobs, but go ahead.
Oh, I know. I mean, there's a database. It's great. The National Conference of State Legislatures and the Institute for Justice, they maintain these databases. You can go and check it out. Some of the things that really just curl your toes, like you mentioned, you know, hair braiders, for example, florists, interior decorators, health coaches. And so these are the ones where they're very inconsistent. That inconsistency alone makes us think, maybe are these really needed? Because if consumers in one state, or in, say, 40 states, don't think they're necessary, but all of a sudden these licenses are found in 10 others, well, you can think something's wrong. Well, again, the economists dug into the data, and they've looked at this, and they've said that there's very little actual consumer benefit, and that the consumers generally don't see licenses as providing any value. But what they do provide, and what the economists have found, again, is they provide a substantial wage premium for the people who are fortunate enough to get that license. And those people, of course, because they're getting that extra money, they then work and lobby the government to develop their own licensing boards. They do that to keep out new competitors and new market entrants.
And a lot of times,
lobby to go ahead.
You know, Scott, I was going to say, I'm sorry. A lot of times, these aren't just once in a lifetime licenses you first get into the business. A lot of these are annual, right?
Right, and they're expensive. You know, it's not just time. You don't just have to spend 60 hours or whatever getting training, but it's hundreds of dollars a year, often cases, to maintain your license. And that, as you can imagine, presents a really substantial barrier to people, especially low-income Americans, starting their own businesses. I mean, if you have to spend all that time and all that money and you're already working a job and maybe you're a single mom or something like that, it really makes starting that business pretty much impossible. And not only that, it discourages mobility. And so it discourages not only changing jobs, but changing states, because oftentimes one state won't recognize a license from another state. So even if you work your butt off and get that license in one state, but then you decide to move for whatever reason, maybe you just like the weather better somewhere else, you can't actually move there without going and getting licensed again and paying all that money and taking all that training. And all of this just slows down the really beneficial churn and adjustment and dynamism of the United States economy. And again, the economists have shown that it's a substantial driver of that slowdown in business dynamism that I mentioned. And that, of course, in turn slows down productivity, innovation, and the rest. And while also just, you know, from kind of a moral standpoint, denying people the opportunity to do what they love and start their own businesses and thrive in the free market.
Now, Scott, there are going to be, and the guest, by the way, is Scott Linsencombe from the Cato Institute. There are going to be people out there saying, Scott, well, you know what? People, you know, should be licensed because there are consumer protections and, you know, gosh, I want my florist to have a license. What would you say to that argument?
Yeah, I'd say that argument perhaps had some merit in the 1960s, perhaps. But today, with the internet, it's completely, I think, erroneous. I think it's really empty. The fact is that you and I can go on, and we do go on the internet every day, and we Google florist, or we Google hair stylist or barber, for those who aren't as much of a dandy as I am, and you can see reviews. You can see thousands of reviews. And that process alone serves as its own informal free market licensing system. And so to the extent that very few of us are just walking into a florist, for example, and searching for a certificate on the wall. No, what you do, if you do anything at all, if you don't just buy them at the grocery store, you go online and you find a reputable provider based on user reviews. You don't need the government's approval. Yeah. And so I think there's not a lot of merit in that anymore. Well, there maybe was a long time ago. Not much of that now.
Scott, finally, before we let you go, I know obviously you follow the American economy very, very closely. What, if you don't mind me asking you at this point, what do you make so far of, you know, Janet Yellen and some of the incoming Biden administration economic people? Underregulation, overregulation, just get out of the way. What do you think we're in for the next 4 years?
Right. So, you know, full disclosure is I'm a free market fiscal conservative. Yeah. So it's unlikely that I would be super thrilled with a lot of the Biden picks, but I have to say I've been pleasantly surprised so far, especially with the Yellen pick and a few others on his team. They're really not kind of hard left progressive types. I think that instead they're kind of moderate center left. Yellen, for example, has expressed concern over the debt. She's been quite good in terms of monetary policy and trade policy. So I think that, you know, those and there are several other picks like that. And so while certainly I'm not going to agree with everything, I think that it's been a pretty good choices so far from kind of, again, a free market perspective. That said, I think it's inevitable that we're going to see more regulation, particularly in energy and environmental space. With respect to things like climate change and labor regulation and the rest, I think that's inevitable. But as long as we can keep kind of the basic macroeconomic policies in good shape, maybe restore a little more sanity to our trade policies and to our immigration policies, it so far seems like we should be in decent shape.
Great stuff. Folks, check them out at the Cato Institute. That's Cato, CATO.org. Scott Linsencombe is a senior fellow at Cato in economic studies. Scott, good to talk with you again. Good holidays, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Linsencombe, L-I-N-C-I-C-O-M-E. Really interesting thoughts there on the economy and all that in the Cato Institute. Gosh darn it, make sure your florist is licensed. You have heard both me talk about, and the governor mentioned it earlier this week, that he is being pressured out of concern because of hospital capacity by some prominent physicians in the state to roll Connecticut back to, pre-phase one opening when there was no indoor dining allowed in any restaurants in the state. It was limited at the beginning of the pandemic to just carry out because of the concern that even restaurants that have 50% capacity now, as it was rolled back a few weeks ago, can spread the coronavirus. Now, this is obviously a hardship for restaurants, some of which have failed. Others are struggling. A select few seem to be doing okay, but now that the cold weather is upon us, you know, having a sandwich on a night like tonight, not really romantic out there. One member of the General Assembly can speak to both the legislative side of this, the governmental side, and as somebody who owns a restaurant. Republican State Senator Paul Formica joins us. He represents the 20th District, which includes East Lyme, Basra, part of Montville, New London, Old Lyme, and parts of Old Saybrook, Salem, and Waterford. Now, Paul has also run, you may have heard of it, the Flanders Fish Market and Restaurant for 35 years. So somebody in the General Assembly who knows from the restaurant business. Paul Pacelli here. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Good. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everybody. We're doing okay.
Well, thanks for hanging out with us, Paul, here for a couple of minutes. I know you're busy with, obviously, the whole restaurateur thing, along with your legislative duties that are going to ramp up here again in a few weeks. But, Paul, what are your feelings on this? It's good that somebody in the General Assembly actually runs an establishment like this. Your restaurant is a well-known fixture among Connecticut restaurants. But, you know, now there's this talk, there's pressure on the governor that he says he's not going to go with yet. He wants to watch the numbers as to maybe completely clamping down again on indoor dining. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, listen, first and foremost, we have to have people be safe. And that's of paramount importance, no matter what industry or business you represent. But I think, you know, we know a lot more about this virus than we did when the governor closed restaurant dining back on St. Patrick's Day. And restaurants have invested considerable amount of money in protection of the consumer with plexiglass and spacing. And, you know, in our case, you know, we're coming up on our 2 weeks. We'll be there 37 years. Wow. And, you know, so we understand what customer confidence is about. And that's what's really going to take the restaurant industry and any other business back, and that is consumer confidence. So we're doing everything we can to make sure consumers are confident that they can come into our establishment and be safe. The staff is, the staff is always masked, and we're sanitizing everything. We put a new air filtration system in our restaurant that kills 99.9% of virus in the air and on hard surfaces. So, you know, we're doing what we can do to make people safe. And I think the consumer is doing what they need to do in terms of protecting themselves for the most part. And those people are paying attention, I think, can still safely eat in restaurants with proper spacing and proper protection.
And Paul, I think the problem here is, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, the danger of one size fits all things here. I mean, obviously, you've been there for over three decades. As you said, congratulations, you're coming up on 37 years. So you're always going to get some flow of traffic, even when you were shut down earlier, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, then the gradual reopening. I assume you do takeout there as well. But some of these smaller establishments, Paul, it's not easy for them, the startups or the people, the mom and pop eateries around the state that could not maybe withstand another complete indoor dining shutdown.
I think you're absolutely right, Paul. And even, you know, the larger, fancier, high-end dining establishments, you know, it's tough to pivot to a new process and move to all takeout. You know, their product is not geared for all takeout. And I'm sure that even at 50%, you know, people are, if you fill all those tables, you're still run the risk of not being able to cover your expenses. You know, we've had over 600 restaurants close. We're going into the worst part of the year up here in Connecticut in terms of weather. So, you know, we lose the outside dining that people were taking advantage of. There were a lot of creativity around that. On people's properties and on behalf of municipalities who helped restaurants, you know, encroach a little bit on the road when they when the municipalities kind of not closed them down, but slowed roads down so that it would be safe for people to eat on sidewalks. All of that goes away in, you know, 15 or 20 degree weather. So catering is dried up. The Christmas season usually is big in that. So it's very difficult to make the ends meet even at 50%. And if you, as you rightfully point out, when you take that away from some of these small, you know, mom and pop places that, you know, can't safely space, then you're gonna run into trouble. And you know, we need to keep the economic opportunities open. Small business is the entrepreneurial engine that provides jobs for 80% of people in our country and our state. So, you know, it's a difficult balance, and I understand the governor's dilemma.
Republican State Senator Paul Formica joins us from the 20th State Senate District, eastern part of the state. He's also a restaurateur for almost 37 years, the owner and operator of the Flanders Fish Market and Restaurant. Paul, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Quick break. More with Paul Formica straight ahead. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And we continue a couple more minutes with Republican State Senator Paul Formica from the 20th State Senate District, eastern part of the state. Also can speak to a decision that may have to be made by Governor Ned Lamont, who's being urged by some doctors to completely shut down indoor dining again if the hospital numbers get bad enough with COVID-19. You know, Paul, I'm saying on this show all the time, and I think people understand it, you know, you can get any business on the planet to shut down and not operate and people stay home if you compensate them for it. If you want to write them a check between the federal government and the state government to say, okay, here's what your net profit was last year. You know, here's a monthly check for that until we can open up again. But you and I both know, Paul, that's not happening.
No, that's not going to happen. And I think we really have to leave it in the hands of the entrepreneurs who help, you know, not only build Connecticut, but built this country on the back of the economy that we have in this great state and in the country. And you know, we have to trust the people that, you know, will make it work. And listen, nobody wants to protect the consumer more than, you know, the proprietor of any business. And if you're going to shut down restaurants coming in that are, you know, people come in with masks, they're sitting 6-8 feet apart, they have plexiglass, they're sitting with people that, you know, most often that they cohabitate with. You've taken away the bars, you've taken away the catering, you've taken away a lot of the profit centers, but yet other places are still have the opportunity of opening. You know, you're still going into grocery stores and the Walmarts and all of that. And, you know, you said it before, one size doesn't fit all. So I think we have to monitor it. We have to make sure people are safe. But I think there's a way to do that and through the entrepreneurial spirit here in Connecticut.
And, Paul, you know, I just in my travels, and I'm sure you've seen it too, I mean, I'm seeing at least 95% of people out there, even on the street now, just walking wearing face masks. But, you know, I'm sure, Paul, there must be some knuckleheads who try to come into your place or, you know, without the mask. But I don't know about you, but I'm seeing it's almost now not even a problem for the vast, vast majority of people. I'm sure you must be seeing that too in your operations. There.
Oh yeah, we're seeing it all the time, and masks are getting more creative, and you know, so people are buying into the fact that that they need to wear it if they're not concerned about, you know, their own protection for other people's protection, and it seems to be working. You know, we have to manage on what's happening with education and kids in school, and you know, there's a lot of conversations that need to be had, and to lay it at the feet of restaurants, I don't think is the answer. People are becoming more aware, they're becoming more careful, and as we are forced to move indoors with the cold weather, I think people are going to even still be more careful.
Mm-hmm. Paul, thank you. Republican State Senator Paul Formica, 20th District, covers many of the eastern Connecticut towns near the shoreline. 37 years coming up on owning the Flanders Fish Market. Paul, we will talk once the session gets underway. Always good to speak with you. Take it easy.
Thanks very much for having me on, and a wonderful holiday season to you and everybody out there.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Republican State Senator Paul Formica, the 20th District. So he's a guy that is not only involved in the lawmaking procedures in this state, but he owns the Flanders Fish Market, where if you've ever been out in the eastern part of the state, Groton, New London, Old Lyme, Old Saybrook, it is a very well-established and well-known restaurant. But, you know, Paul, like the other restaurateurs in the state, it's not all that easy to survive without, you know, at least some foot traffic in there. And like he said, you know, we all understand. Doctors are saying this out of a professional, how could you say it, out of a professional need they feel to say that. We expect to hear frank talk from our healthcare professionals.